You want to turn to Genesis chapter 42. We'll be looking there tonight. It is amazing that Genesis covers about 2,000 years of history. That is nearly a third of the time that since creation. The earth's only been here, according to the scriptures, about 6,000 years. And so 2,000 of that is covered in this first book of the Bible. And so that's a lot to cover in just 50 short chapters. God did a good job breaking that down and putting that all into just a small package. If you remember the last time the famine was all over the face of the earth, that known area of the world, at least to that time, and of course Egypt had prepared for it because Joseph had interpreted Pharaoh's dream. Well, chapter 42 begins then in verse 1 with telling us that Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt. Now, when it says saw, it doesn't mean he went to Egypt and saw it with his eyes. He heard about it. He found out about it. It's amazing. Even without the technology that we have today, no telephones, no telegraph, no post office even, they still were able to find out things that were going on elsewhere in the world. And so Jacob found out about it. And he looked at his sons. He asked them, the King James says, why do you look on one another? Well, he's basically asking them, what are you waiting for? There's food down there in Egypt. Go get some. And so he sends them. Now, despite this famine that's going on, and it's going on in his land as well as Egypt and other places, Jacob still had the wealth to be able to send and buy food. The problem was, where he was, there wasn't anything to buy. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you have, if there's nothing to buy, that money won't do you any good. So Jacob had the wealth, but there was nothing where he was in Canaan's land to be able to buy, and so he had to send his sons over to Egypt. He sent Joseph's 10 older brothers. He didn't send Benjamin, Joseph's younger brother, and the only other brother that Rachel gave birth to. He didn't send that one. He was afraid something might happen to that young fellow. Now that young fellow was probably in his 20s by this point. Joseph is around 30 by this point, and Benjamin was younger than Joseph, but not necessarily a whole lot younger, but he may have very well been a grown man by this time. In fact, what we see is that if we think about Jacob's family here, there were 70, give or take a couple, in his immediate family. His sons, their wives, and their children. That was about 70. But remember, all the way back to Abraham, all the servants Abraham had, and then he passed his wealth on to Isaac, and so Isaac had lots of servants as well. And then Isaac, you know, he gave Esau some, gave, you know, Jacob some of his wealth. But Jacob went to Laban and worked there and got more wealth. And so Jacob's a wealthy individual. And his family, a wealthy family, and they've got servants as well. The Bible doesn't tell us how many servants they had. There are 70 of them. And certainly they probably, maybe they didn't have as many servants as Abraham had had. Abraham had hundreds of servants. But they still had a lot of servants. Now add to that, all of the animals. They kept livestock. Now, I know cows and sheep and things, they can eat grass to a certain degree, but at some point, you know, when there's a famine, when there's a drought, when nothing's growing, they're going to have to eat something too. You know, when you have a bad hay year and you don't get enough hay for the horses and the cattle, then you're going to have to buy some from somebody else. Well, they had 7 years coming like this, where it was bad year after bad year. That's a lot to have to go buy. So he sent all 10 of those older brothers with the money to go buy things. In verse 6, they come into the land. And Joseph, of course, was the governor, the King James says, over the land. He was second in command below Pharaoh. And when they came into the land, he was selling the grain to the people. And so they come before him, and verse 6 tells us they bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. That seems awfully familiar. That's just like the dream he had, wasn't it? Where their sheaves bowed down to his sheaves. It's finally being fulfilled. His brothers are coming and bowing down to him. Now Joseph recognized his brothers. He knew who they were. Maybe he'd heard them talking before they got there. Maybe it was the fact that the way they were dressed, or maybe it was the language they spoke that he recognized. Maybe he just recognized the way they looked. Maybe it was the fact that all 10 of them were there together. Maybe if he'd have seen just one of them, he might not have recognized one. But he saw these 10 brothers, and he knew who they were. He recognized those brothers. But they did not recognize him. Now, I don't know why they didn't recognize him. Maybe because he was speaking, that later we find out he's speaking through an interpreter. He wasn't speaking their language. Maybe it's because they were expecting to see an Egyptian, and so they saw an Egyptian. He was dressed like an Egyptian, and he was in that image, so they didn't recognize him. Maybe he had changed over the years. He was just a young man in his teenage years, most likely, at least 17, but not perhaps too much older than that when they sold him. Maybe he's changed in his appearance quite a bit, perhaps. But they didn't recognize him. They didn't know who he was. So Joseph takes advantage of the fact that they don't know who he is. And one of the things about Joseph, as we think about the way we treat people, all of us, like Joseph, have had somebody mistreat us. Maybe we hadn't been sold into slavery like Joseph was. Or maybe we hadn't been threatened with death, like they were going to kill him. Maybe we hadn't had that kind of thing happen, but we've all been mistreated one way or another. When the opportunity comes to get even, to get back at somebody who's done us wrong, how do we react? What do we do? Do we take advantage of that situation? Joseph very easily could have done all sorts of things to them. In fact, what we're going to see him do, we might think, well, he is. He's kind of getting some payback. But a lot of people have said, well, no, he's testing them to see if they've changed any. He's testing to see if they've matured any by the things that he puts them through, to see what kind of men they really are. He asks them, or says to them rather, that, oh, you're spies. You came to see how bad things are here in Egypt, and that's why you're here. You're spies. And of course they say, no, we're not spies. We're all the sons of one man. We're not spies. We're brothers. We're honest men. We're true men, the King James said. Well, Joseph knows they didn't used to be. So if they are now, they've changed. So he wants to find out. And so he continues to say, no. You came to see the nakedness of the land. You came to see how barren the fields in Egypt are. You came to see if you could conquer us. That's why you came. And he keeps pressing that on them. I want you to imagine, if you can. Maybe some of you have been there. You ever been to a foreign country where they speak a different language? I don't know if Texas counts. There's some places in Texas where they more people speak a foreign language than English over there. But if you've ever been to a foreign country where people speak a different language, that in and of itself can be a little frightening. You can't communicate with somebody very well. You don't know the customs and the laws of the land. Now here are these 10 brothers. They come to a foreign land where they don't understand the language. And this man is speaking to them through an interpreter, and he's saying, you guys are spies. Imagine for a minute finding yourself in Egypt of today and being accused of being spies. Imagine that situation. It's a frightening situation these guys are in. And I don't think under Pharaoh's law there in Egypt, I don't think they had some of the same organizations we have here in America that make sure that somebody who gets arrested gets a fair trial, or that a lawyer will be provided for them. I don't think they had those kinds of things. They realize that they're in a bad situation. This guy, he's head over the land. He can have them executed if he wants to. He can do whatever he wants to with them. And nobody could do anything about it. I mean, it's Egypt. This is the largest, strongest, mightiest nation in the world. What could they do? And so he keeps saying, no, you're spies. That's why you're here. And it's, no, we were 12 brothers, the sons of one man. And the youngest is with our father, and one is not. Well, they've been telling this lie about Joseph being dead for so long, now they've told it to him. He's not anymore. In other words, he's dead. He's not around anymore. And so they go on. Joseph says, oh, no, you're spies. And they said, well, I'll tell you what. Here's how you can prove. If you're really honest men, if you're not really spies, then here's how you do it. I want to see your youngest brother. You're telling me you got him? I want to see him. You know, Joseph hadn't seen his brother in over 13 years. It's been a long time. And he loved Benjamin. That was his brother. More than these others, these are all half-brothers, really. Benjamin's his only full-blooded brother. And he wants to see Benjamin again. Wants to make sure he's okay. He says, this is what you do. He says, I'm going to keep all of you in prison except for one, and then one of you can go back and bring your younger brother, your youngest brother. And then when he comes back, I'll know you're not really spies. And so he put them in jail for 3 days. He put them in the jail there and gave them some time to think about it. But then after the third day, he said, well, I'll tell you what, I fear God, so here's what I'm going to do. Instead of 9 of you staying and 1 of you going back, you just leave 1 of you here, and the other 9 can go back. How would you like to be that one brother, knowing what you all did to one of your other brothers, to be the one that got picked to stay behind? You trust those other brothers to come back and get you? He says, if you're true men, then this is what you do. One of you can be bound in the prison, but you take corn for this famine that's going on. You take that to your family. You know, Joseph wasn't a cruel man. He did not want to see the wives and children, and certainly not his father and Benjamin, suffer. He knew this drought was going on. He didn't want to see them suffer because of his brothers. But at the same time, he's still wanting to know if these brothers are like they used to be. And he wants to know that before he would ever think of revealing who he really is. So he said, but you bring your youngest brother to me, and I'll know your words are true, and you shall not die. And that's what they did. But while they were talking out who's going to get to go, they had this discussion. And who's going to have to stay is the main thing. Which one has to stay? They were talking to each other. Oh, we're guilty concerning our brother. We saw the anguish of his soul when he begged us, and we wouldn't hear him. Therefore, this has come upon us. They said, we're getting what we deserve for what we did to Joseph. We're getting payback. And Reuben said, didn't I tell you not to sin against him? Didn't I tell you not to do that to him? But you wouldn't listen to me. And so now, his blood is required. You're going to have to face the fact of what you did. Well, now Reuben, I know Reuben didn't want him to kill him, and it was his idea to put him in the pit, and he thought he'd come back and rescue him. Seems all noble. But remember, after the other brothers sold him and Reuben came and found out what happened there, he didn't exactly go back and tell his dad either, did he? You know, they might have been able to catch up with those Ishmaelites and bought Joseph back out of slavery if they had hurried. If he'd have gone straight home and told his dad what happened, his dad had servants that could have gone and caught up with those Ishmaelites and got Joseph back, but he didn't do that. He helped cover it up. So he's not exactly pure as the white driven snow, is he? Well, but he warns them of that. Verse 23 is very interesting. It says, they did not know that Joseph understood them because he had been speaking to them by an interpreter. He'd been speaking Egyptian and using an interpreter to interpret into the Hebrew for them, so they didn't realize he understood Hebrew because they didn't know who he was. And so he heard this whole conversation now. I don't know how much he knew before about what had happened when he was sold, about whose idea it was or what, but he knows now who was on his side and who wasn't. But oh, they don't know what's going on, and so they keep talking. Well, then Joseph gets so upset by what he's hearing and by seeing his brothers again, he went away from them a little way. He turned around from them, and he wept. And then he returned to them again and talked with them again. And he took Simeon, and he bound him right in front of them. He didn't want them to think he was playing around. So he bound Simeon to put him in jail, to put him in prison. And then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with the grain and to give every man's money back into his sack. So that's what they did. They filled the sacks with the grain and then they put the money bag that they had brought to pay, they put that back in the sack. And so then, as they are leaving, they're going along and they've got all their stuff and they stop, and you know, one of the animals is hungry, so he gives his donkey something to eat here. And sure enough, when he opens up his bag, there's his money bag right there in the top. Now imagine again, you're in that foreign country. You've already been accused of being spies. And now you realize that this grain that you're carrying home, these supplies that you have, that you've gotten, haven't been paid for. Now you're not only a spy, but a thief. And you didn't have it. I mean, you paid for it. You gave them the money. But now, here's the money. And sure enough, when they got back home, they emptied their sacks. Every one of them had their money back. It wasn't just a fluke. It wasn't just, oh, they forgot this one. They all had the money. Well, that was a frightening thing indeed. So they came to Jacob and they told him what all happened. And they explained how they had told about Joseph, had told about Benjamin rather, and his father, their father's just, he's fit to be tied, as the saying goes. He is upset about this. Verse 36. Jacob, after seeing those bundles of money and everything and knowing all their story and what they were saying and that they had to take Benjamin back in order to get to see him again, in order to get any more grain or anything like that. Verse 36, they're all afraid and Jacob says, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is not. And now Simeon is not. And you want to take Benjamin away. All these things are against me." Have you ever had a time in your life where you felt like all those things were against you? You felt like it was just all piling up on the bad side. Everything was against me, against me, against me. Everything bad's happening to me. And the thing is, once you start to get into that attitude, then you start looking for things to be bad. And then anything happens. You just take it to be bad, even if it wasn't something bad. This is going to be bad somehow, because only bad things are happening to me. Well, he's concerned about it, all these things against him. Now see, that's the problem with not knowing about God's plan. Now Romans 8:28 tells us that all things work together for good for those that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. And all things were working together for good for Jacob, but he didn't know it. The things that were happening to him seemed to be bad. He didn't know that Joseph was the ruler over the land of Egypt under Pharaoh. He didn't know that there were going to be 7 years of drought. He may have thought, well, we had a bad year last year, and this year's kind of bad, but surely next year will be better, you know. But he didn't know what God's plan was. He didn't know. And so he imagined the worst. Have you ever been in that situation where it just seems like it's all bad? Those are the times when our faith is tested. Those are the times when we find out whether we really believe that God is watching out for us or not. When the bad things come. It's easy when things are going good and everything's smooth. The time we have to really buckle down and really try our faith and test it and see what we're really made of are the times when things like this are happening. The old saying, it's always darkest just before the dawn. I don't know if that's true. I guess it depends on the phase of the moon. Sometimes the moon's still out right before the dawn, so it can't be real dark. But they say that things always seem to get worse before they get better. Seems like things are really bad. And certainly, that's going to happen to Jacob too. It's going to get worse before it gets better even for him here now. Reuben, though, speaks up and he says to his father, Reuben comes up with a strange idea. Those of you who are grandparents, see what you think about this. So Jacob's son says, well, you know, Dad, if I don't bring him back, if I don't go get Simeon and bring him back, or if I don't bring Benjamin back to you, because Benjamin was the one he was really... He's already counted Simeon as lost. Simeon's gone. You've bereaved me of Simeon. But Benjamin, he says, if I don't bring Benjamin back, if I don't bring your son back, then you can slay my two sons. I don't know, grandparents, how would you feel about that? One of your children said, well, if I don't bring my brother back, you can kill your grandkids. That seems like an odd request, doesn't it? That's not a lot to bargain with. Why on earth would he want to kill his grandkids? That doesn't make any sense. And yet that's the thing that Reuben proposes. But Jacob says, my son shall not go down with you. For his brother is dead and he is left alone. If mischief befalls him by the way in which you go, then you shall bring my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. He said, if anything happened to Benjamin, I'd just die. I already lost Joseph. I'm counting Simeon as lost. If I lost Benjamin too, it'd just kill me. I'd just die. You know, some people have. I've known people who, because they lost a loved one, sometimes it may have been a spouse, maybe it was a child, they just quit living. Now, they may have kept breathing and eating and stuff for a while, but they quit living. They died. They kept existing as a human being, but they weren't living anymore. They gave up on life. Certainly, we shouldn't ever do that. We should continue to live the life that we have remaining for the glory of God to the best of our abilities. But you can understand why Jacob would have felt this way. Remember, these aren't the only people Jacob's lost. Recently, in the time of our story, within a few years, he's also lost his father. He's had bad things happen to his daughter. He's had all these things happen to him. And he doesn't mention some of those things, but all of those things are weighing in on his soul and adding to the problems that are going on in his life here, or at least the problems he thinks are going on in his life. Really, things aren't nearly as bad as he thinks they are. Isn't that the way it is with us many times? That things aren't really as bad as we think they are. We're so afraid, we're so worried, we've got all these things going on in our minds, we're imagining all these horrible things that could happen, and we're worrying about it. And there's fear out there. You know, the Fisher's Men course teaches us that fear is false evidence that appears real. That's what Jacob was facing here. He was afraid Joseph was dead. He was afraid Simeon was gone. He was afraid Benjamin was going to be lost if he went. He was afraid that his sons were going to be arrested for thieves if they went back to Egypt because of that money situation. He had all these fears. He's going to have to grow some faith, isn't he? Because faith conquers fear. Well, we'll see next week whether Jacob is able to overcome his fears. Sometimes what actually happens is one fear overpowers another. The Bible teaches us very clearly that we are to fear the Lord. We're to fear God and keep His commandments. You know, if we have the fear of God in our lives, then all of those other fears won't measure up to our fear of the Lord. If we're putting God first, then all those other things are going to have to come second or third or on down the line. Everything else. Nothing else can be first if God's first in our lives. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added to you, Jesus said. Sometimes we're so afraid about the physical things that we forget that if we're fearing God, if we're putting Him first, if we're seeking His kingdom first, He'll take care of the rest of it. Now that doesn't mean, oddly enough, that nothing bad will happen to us. You know, Jesus spoke that in the presence of His apostles. The Bible only tells us about one of those apostles in particular. James was beheaded. The other apostles, as far as we know though, none of them except for John lived to a ripe old age. All of them were killed in one way or another. Only John. And John was in exile. So it doesn't mean that nothing bad will ever happen to us. Only that when it does, God will be with us. And He'll go with us through those bad times. And He will work it out for good. And you know, sometimes working it out for good actually means physical death. Sometimes it means actually going to be with Him in glory. That's good, isn't it? Don't we want to get to go to be with God in glory? But sometimes we're kind of like the little boy in Bible class and the teacher asked, you know, who wants to go to heaven? And he didn't raise his hand. And she said, well, maybe he didn't understand. Who wants to go to heaven? Raise your hand if you want to go to heaven to be with Jesus. And he didn't raise his hand. And she finally said, Johnny, don't you want to get to go be with Jesus someday when you die? And he said, oh, well, yeah, I thought you were talking about right now. And sometimes that's the way we feel, isn't it? Oh, we want to go be with Jesus someday. Well, for all of us, that day's going to come. And instead of dreading it and fearing it, we need to look forward to it. Paul said that he was in a strait betwixt two. For at one part, he wanted to depart and be with the Lord and get out of this old suffering world. But for the other part, he knew it was more needful for the Christians for him to stay a little longer and keep teaching and preaching and doing those things. But what about us? Sometimes we may get so wrapped up in this world that we forget that there's a better world to come. When those bad things happen, and bad things will happen, no matter how faithful to God you are, bad things will happen. The only difference is, if we trust God, He'll be there with us. But for those who don't trust God, they have to face those things alone. I don't know how they make it through. I don't know how you make it through some of the temptations and the trials and the tribulations and the difficulties of life. I don't know how you make it through if you don't have God with you. He's the one that gives us strength. Tonight, perhaps you've been caught up in a pity party, kind of like Jacob was in our lesson tonight. Maybe you're just so wrapped up in how bad things are for you or how much trouble you're facing that you've forgotten that God is more powerful. God is mighty. God is able to do abundantly above all that we think or imagine. If you have a need to respond to the invitation, perhaps to turn your life over to Him for the first time, to repent of your sins, confess Him as the Christ, and be buried with Him in baptism to rise and walk a new life. Or perhaps as a Christian, you've let your faith get tackled by your fears. Get that faith back up on its feet and run over the top of those fears. If you need to respond tonight, please do so as we stand and as we sing.